Okay, if everyone could please face the flag and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, John. Okay. Roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Green.
Yes.
Director Wiegand. Director Wiegand. Director Yeo.
Here.
Director Tran.
Here.
Director Nguyen.
Here.
Director Mezqua. Director Jung.
Present.
Director Meeks. Director Sheldon. Director Bilodeau.
Present.
You do have a quorum of your committee.
Are there any items too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Okay. Vista participation. Anybody want to speak? Anybody on bar? Okay. We move to the consent calendar. We have a motion for the consent calendar, items 1 through 13.
Move the consent calendar.
I'll second the motion.
Moved by Director Yeo, second by Director Tran.
Roll call, Director Green.
Yes.
Director Wiegand.
Yes.
Director Yeo. Director Tran.
Yes.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
That motion carries with 5 yes votes. I believe I heard Director Wiegand, correct?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Voted yes.
Yes.
Okay. Moving on to California Water for All Coalition.
Madam Chair, we have Craig Miller here. He's the general manager of the Western Municipal Water District, and he's going to talk about our potential participation in the California Water for All Coalition.
Welcome, Greg.
Are you ready? Thank you, John. It's great to be back. It's been a while. The trees have grown. The landscape's beautiful from when I was here last time. When I was working here, we had just launched the lab, and they were just little tiny bushes. So it's really great to see how it's grown. I'm here to talk today about California Water for All. This is a statewide initiative that we've been working on for 3 years, basically. And I know this board has taken a support position on SB 72, but I'm here today to talk about the broader issue of California Water for All. So the bill is one thing. I talk about it as the baby steps to the planning process of developing water supply. So let me kind of run through this presentation, and I'm really happy to answer any questions you may have. But I'm going to talk a little bit about the bill, but more about the movement of California Water for All. So next slide. Maybe. There we go. So what started this? As a water manager, we've been doing this for over 30 years now. And as water agencies, we've sat through this boom and bust process. And here's Oroville. We've all seen these pictures, spilling. And that picture on the left was the spillway crumbling. We all watched that in 2017. We all thought the dam was going to burst. It was actually extremely close to topping. That's an earthen levee that the water is going over on the left of the spillway, that was eating away. And then we see the right side. That right side is actually only 5 years after that was spilling. So enormous variations in our storage capacity and our hydrologic variations. Next slide. So this is a timeline. There's a lot of argument statewide in the water community and the environmental community about climate change, and do we really see effects from it? Are we not seeing effects? Will we see effects in the future? And I go right to this timeline. Like you can argue the science all you want. Here's what's actually happening. 2017, we just saw it, historic rain, the spillway full, all the reservoirs in the state brimming full. 2018 was dry, everything dropped a little bit. 2019 was wet, everything filled back up. 2020 was dry. 2021 was dry. And in December of 2021, the state water project declared a zero allocation. It's literally less than 3 years of capacity in the statewide reservoir system. That is unacceptable. And, when we look at that, and what started this California Water for All was literally general managers having coffee and lunch that started with the Metropolitan Member Agency managers. And, I still remember sitting with Dave Peterson from Las Virgenes, who's 100 per, Las Virgenes, 100% dependent on the State Water Project. They don't have any other connection. They don't have groundwater. And I said, Dave, we were talking during the zero allocation. I said, if it doesn't rain this year, what are you doing next year? He's already putting flow restrictors in customers' meters at that point. He goes, I have no idea what we're going to do. And that's an ugly day when water managers don't have control of a long-term plan. And so out of that, we said, we have to start doing something. And so at that point in December of 2021, we started thinking about how can we move water infrastructure investment and construction forward. It didn't really rain in 2021, only December was wet. They elevated to a 5% allocation, and then we had that for 2 years. We've never seen a 5% allocation, let alone a 0% allocation on the state water project. Change needs to be made. 2022, end of 22, and 24 have all been wet. So, unfortunately for us, people have kind of forgotten that our reservoir system was dry, and it was only 3 years to make it dry. Next slide. So, impacts to communities. So, what's a 0% allocation? At Western, 60% of our water is coming from the State Water Project. We don't get Colorado River water from Metropolitan because of the plumbing. We're very fortunate to have Diamond Valley Reservoir on our side of the Met system. We were in very good shape during the drought. But being 60% dependent on the State Water Project, you can't look the other way of a zero allocation or a 5% allocation. We have to take action. In 22, Southern California lost over 2 million acre feet from the State Water Project. That's water not delivered. We didn't have the ability to deliver that. We all know Colorado River is in a tough situation. They have to have a new agreement by 26 to operate that. Who knows what's going to happen? But our allocation in Southern California is not going up. It's just a matter of where it goes from here. So we're not leaning from the State Water Project challenges to the Colorado River for relief. Luckily, Metropolitan has a lot of water in storage in Lake Mead, but we don't even know what the fate of that water is. It might be, portion of it might be dedicated by the Bureau into the overall system of the river. We don't know if Met is even going to be able to maintain that water that they've invested to put there. So the Colorado River is not the solution. We have to come up with something on the state. We look at other supplies. We hear a lot about, well, local control, you guys do this locally. And, you guys are like the perfect example of groundwater management. You're a model in the state. You're a model in the watershed. Not everyone has the benefit that we have here in Orange County. So there's a lot of people left out of the groundwater game. So you go to Ocean Desal, right? That's another step. Well, that didn't work. So that's gone for a lot of people. So where do we go? Recycled water. Again, you've led the way. Us in the upper watershed, we're 100% recycled. 100%. Our argument is how many more times can we use every drop of water before it gets down here and you guys ultimately use it kind of the last time? So it's not like we're all shifting to indirect potable reuse projects unless we get a lot more sewage in the watershed. So that's not an answer. We're models of conservation. That's not really the answer. So it falls on development of facilities to capture the water that Mother Nature is falling on the state. We started this and said, as a group of general managers came together and said, what do we really need? And we landed on the state needs at least 15 million acre feet of new water supply by 2050. And I'll talk about the bill and where the bill finally landed on that. But, and that is not just storage, that's not just conveyance, that's everything. That's local water supply, that's recycling statewide, that's groundwater recharge, it's ocean desal in certain cases where it makes sense. It's all the tools that we have as water managers that need to be invested in and implemented. Next slide. You know, when I started this, it was with Southern California water managers. Then it was Met water managers. Then it was Northern California water managers. And then we made a lot of friends in ag. And we started talking to the Central Valley and the ag. And we thought, oh, it's always urban versus ag. And, you know, who knows what they're thinking, because I didn't spend that much time talking with them. And I started to. So I started talking to general managers in the Central Valley. And I was shocked that they told the exact same story that we were telling down here. We have to have investment in stormwater capture. If you look at the zero allocation that we saw, the 5%, we saw the Central Valley, the federal project had a zero allocation for ag. Ag was in bigger trouble than we were. The estimate in 22 was $1.7 billion in revenue loss in the ag community. Those are big numbers. 14,000 jobs, almost 400,000 acres of land left unplanted. And so, you know, I look at it as a Southern California water person. Ag is not our number one priority. We have grapes and we have citrus out at Western in our service area, but food security is certainly important to us. You know, we don't turn our back as Southern California on food security. And I think at the Water Summit, you know, we made sure we had someone in ag at that Water Summit to talk about what we do, because success of the Central Valley ag programs is imperative to our state's economy and our nation. Next slide. So, you know, the state strategy for decades has been, you guys take care of it locally. You know, you've told us you want local control. We're giving you local control. Good luck. You need to come up with your own water supply. Well, that worked to a certain degree. You guys turbocharged that at OCWD and have done everything you can, but that's not enough. And, you know, not everyone's at OCWD, right? We're speaking for a whole lot of other water entities across this state that aren't as in as fortunate position as maybe we are in the Santa Ana River watershed. But this is a statewide issue. This is not a local, this is taking your agency hat off and figuring out how do we help the whole. Recycled water, we've done. Conservation, we've done. Local water, groundwater development, we've done. We're either managed groundwater basins, we're legally adjudicated basins. It's not like you can turn and say, hey, let's pump more water. It's just not there. So we have to go to back to a statewide strategy that we did back in the 70s when they built the State Water Project. And by the way, in the 70s, when they were planning the State Water Project, they estimated how much water would be used in the year 2000. And they knew they had to build the project to accommodate that. And they nailed the numbers. If you go back and read those documents, they estimated exactly what ag use and urban use is across the state back in the 50s and 60s when they did that study. They just didn't follow through and build the whole project. Next slide. So, California Water for All, a statewide education effort. And I would argue an advocacy effort. We want to bring water communities, policymakers, stakeholders, certainly legislators, both local and statewide. You know, we need city council people to recognize this. We need board members at water agencies to recognize the need to stick together and advocate for water investment. We've lost that. We have to get it back. And, you know, we talk a lot about in the California Water for All group, we got to stop this practice of undermining someone else's project to get your pet project. We need all of them. Today, you know, we're licking our wounds a little bit because Delta Conveyance trailer bill didn't move forward yesterday. That's not good for the water industry. It's not good for the water industry. It needs to move. We need to all advocate for that, even though some of you might not really benefit from it, but it's super important to the economy of the state. So this is an effort to make sure that we're advocating in the right direction. and sticking together. Next slide. So the bill. So what's the bill? Where, how does this play into it? So we came together as a group of about 25 to 30 general managers from across the state and a couple of association representatives. We locked ourselves in a room. We actually locked ourselves in a room five different times. And we said, what hasn't worked over the last four decades? And what's gotten us into this position of a zero allocation? And boy, there's a lot of arguing about what the solution was. And we said, well, let's first try. We're going to advocate for the most important project in the state, the most important water supply project in the state. So we assign these 25 people, go back to your agency. Your homework assignment before we meet next time is to name your top three projects, water projects that the state should build. Top three, only three. Most not for your agency, for the state. Send them to me. We'll put it into a spreadsheet and we'll have a winner. We got 84 projects. 84 projects. 75 of the projects I'd never heard of because they're pet projects. And it just really highlighted that advocating for projects is going to be really hard. And then you have the opposition parties that are going to try and blow up every project. And so it's like, how do we stick together? And where this group unanimously landed is we have to have a plan. We have to have a water supply development plan for the state. How do we do that? So we came up with the idea that if you read the California Water Plan, there is no state goal for water supply in the California Water Plan. It doesn't have an aspirational target. And we said, that is the baby step. We have to come up with an aspirational target so that the state can plan behind it, and all of us can then plan behind what the state's going to do. And so SB 72 is all about kind of baby steps to start a planning process. The hard work, and as part of the bill, it forms an advisory committee to work with Department of Water Resources to come up with a plan to meet the water supply objective. Now, the target is 9 million acre feet of new water supply by year 2040. You saw 15 million before. That was our thought by 2050. So the bill says, DWR, you're going to set up a plan to get 9 million acre feet by 2040, and then you're going to set up your own planning process to set a target for 2050. Water managers want to be at the table. We are part of the advisory committee. Water managers are not at the table at DWR. DWR is at the table at DWR. The people who provide water to 40 million people need to have a voice in the plan. And so this bill sets up that pathway for water managers to have a voice. And then it ensures accountability because DWR has to report back to the legislature every single year on how they're making progress to achieving the 9 million acre feet by 2040. So that's the bill. Next slide. We have supporters. We have over 200 supporters. It says nearly 200 support. I think we have over 200 supporters. The bill just passed last week out of the legislature unanimously, went through the Senate and two committees unanimously, went through the assembly, two committees and the assembly four unanimously. Not even an amendment. We didn't have to take one single amendment. It's now on the governor's desk. We did a press conference Monday, kind of highlighting that, announcing it. We need to get the governor to sign it. So any of you that have the hotline to the governor, please use it to get his signature to sign SB 72 into law. And then the hard work's going to start. And that's what I'm here to talk about. You know, OCWD is a supporter of the bill. I appreciate that. You're a voice in statewide water, and you need to be part of the planning process with us. And so what I'm here today is to try and get OCWD's commitment as a financial supporter. All the other, not all these supporters, but the financial, oh, let's go to the next slide. I think I actually have a slide of the financial supporters. Yeah, here you go. So 22 financial supporters. This money is going to feed the campaign. It's going to feed the planning process as we move forward to the next step of how do we get this group together. That's where the money comes into play. So being an ex-OCWD employee and the role that you play in statewide water, You should be on this list and you should be at the table. And so I'm here today to ask for the same $20,000 that almost all of the, there are a few that don't budget for things like this and they couldn't actually budget 20,000, but they scraped together what they could. But the vast majority of these agencies are putting in 20 or more. And so, you know, I think you're a player in statewide water, and I would love to see you on this list. Next slide. What do you get? You're a team member. You have a voice. You can be on the leadership team. And obviously, all of the toolkits that we've developed as California Water for All are going to be at your access. You'll have a voice in changing those and creating those. But I hope that we're part of a movement that's going to really change the path of water. And it needs to change. I'm not sure if we have the strength to change it, but we're trying. And so I hope you'll join us. I think that's it. Next slide. So happy to answer questions.
Any questions or comments? Can't see. Do we have any questions or comments?
Director Yeo has his hand raised.
Director Yeo?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Green and Craig. Thank you very much. And it's good to see you actually two times in a week. Yeah, yeah, I appreciate your presentation. And you know, it's good to see our trees grow, and it's good to see ex former OCWD employees like you grow professionally. So very proud of what you have accomplished. So you mentioned that the program mission is about statewide education effort and legislative advocacy. So you're asking for 20,000. Is this a one-time contribution, or it could be an ongoing annual contribution?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And when we started this, it was a one-time contribution. And then when the bill stalled, and got vetoed last year, we had a heart-to-heart talk with our group, and we said, "Well, what do you want to do? Do we want to run this bill again?" And so, you know, it was SB 366 when it got vetoed. It's now SB 72, and there was unanimous support that we're going to sign up again for another $20,000 contribution from everyone. But the commitment was not an ongoing contribution; it was a one-time contribution. So, and then everyone made their choice that no, we want to re-up again to make another contribution. Personally, I don't envision that we're coming back to people for money again. Now, if the bill gets vetoed, I hate saying that out loud. If the bill does get vetoed, we're going to sit down with the group and decide a path forward. It could be that we go again, and it could be that we try a different tactic. And you know, whether we need money to do that or not, I don't know. You know, the investment so far has predominantly gone to the outreach campaign to promote the bill and get it through the legislature. And so I'm certainly hoping that we're not doing that again. I hope the next step is we're figuring out how to get ourselves to the table with DWR to start doing the planning work. We don't need money to do that.
Okay, thank you for the clarity you provided.
Any other questions or comments? Anybody clear? Craig, who does the advocacy in your group?
Okay, well, the actual advocacy is the lobbyists of all the agencies. So you're using your own lobbyist. So we use Ed Manning from KP to do that work, and he's done a fabulous job. Now, the public outreach side of it, where the majority of this money has gone, is from a different arm of KP. There's an ethical wall in between there, and that's all marketing money. That's all gone to the campaign. So everyone's contributed their money, and they've inspired their own advocates to be back in Sacramento walking the halls for us. So we've had a really strong team, and that's one of the reasons why we moved through unanimously. It's because of all of our lobbyists statewide that have been helping.
Thank you. Okay, do we have a motion?
I move to make the one-time contribution of $20,000 toward this effort.
I'll second.
Okay, roll call. Director Green?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Are you on me?
Director Yeo?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Okay. Good luck.
All right. Thank you very much. It was great seeing you all.
We'll be watching for SB 72 and what happens. Okay. Next, we have the Santa Ana Sucker translocation.
Yeah, Madam Chair, our Natural Resources Director, Cheryl Parsons, will give this presentation.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you guys for having me. I'm here today to talk about the district's obligation to complete a translocation of the Santa Ana Sucker. So last week, Heather Dyer from San Bernardino Valley Municipal Water District spoke to the board, and she, my gosh, yeah, I got it. She provided a bit of background on the HCP. And I'm going to go into a little more detail about how she mentioned that the HCP is really our only option moving forward to complete a translocation for the Santa Ana Sucker. I'm also going to spend a little time today talking about what even is a translocation and, again, into those details about the costs associated with it. So first, we're going to start with what is the Santa Ana Sucker, if I can get it to advance. There you go. So the Santa Ana Sucker is a federally threatened fish that is only found in the San Gabriel, Los Angeles, and Santa Ana rivers. It gets its name, for as you can see in the video that's playing here, from the way it eats. It's sucking the algae off of these rocks. But as the Santa Ana River has been subjected to increased sedimentation and decreased base flows, the bottom of the Santa Ana River has changed from this gravelly cobble substrate to more of a sandy bottom. So it has become federally threatened in this area. Now it's only found in the upper tributaries. As you can see on this map here, that green is that historical range, and now it's only found in the upper reaches of that river. Since one of the main thrusts to the Santa Ana Sucker is, as I said, that decreasing base flow, back in the 1990s, when OCWD submitted a water rights application to appropriate 505,000 acre feet of water from the Santa Ana River, CDFW, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, protested that application, citing effects to the Santa Ana Sucker. Currently, flows from the Santa Ana River average about 140,000 acre feet per year, and that value of that water to us is approximately $140 million per year. So in order to get this water right, we entered into agreement with CDFW that they would dismiss their protest if OCWD completed 6 conservation actions related to the Santa Ana Sucker. These are the 6 actions here. The first 3 have to do with the Santa Ana Sucker translocation or reintroduction. You'll see those used interchangeably. What that means is taking a population of Santa Ana Sucker fish and putting them somewhere else in the Santa Ana River or in one of the tributaries to establish a new population there. And the last 3 on here have to do with experimental sucker habitat restoration. We completed those, and those aren't pertinent to our discussion today. So in 2020, OCWD submitted a letter to CDFW indicating that we believed we had completed all of these conservation actions. But in 2021, CDFW submitted a response determining that we had completed all but 2 of these actions here. And those have to do with that translocation. So it's creating a translocation plan and implementing the translocation itself. And I do want to highlight the due dates on here as well. You can see that this was supposed to be completed in 2007, so we are currently about 18 years out of compliance for this agreement. So what did we say in 2020 that we had done to complete this translocation work, we had been doing lots of work regarding the Santa Ana sucker. In 2010, we restored habitat to Sunny Slope Creek. So prior to 2005, Santa Ana sucker spawned frequently in Sunny Slope Creek. But in 2005, there was a large storm that closed off the creek from the Santa Ana River. So sucker could no longer reach that stream. So from 2005 to 2010, there were no Santa Ana sucker in there. We restored the habitat, reconnected the creek to the river, and since 2011, Santa Ana sucker have been found in the creek. We also joined SAPA's sucker conservation team, and with them hosted two workshops with other stakeholders in the watershed to look into Santa Ana sucker reintroduction and translocation. However, those workshops were delayed and postponed by concerns that the United States Fish and Wildlife Service had about reintroduction efforts. We also gave money to SAWA, which was then given to Riverside Corona Resource Conservation District to fund a Santa Ana sucker breeding facility and program. And sucker from the facilities were used in subsequent translocation efforts. However, CDFW pointed out that that's all nice, but none of those are actually a translocation, and we need to complete a translocation, physically taking those fish and putting them into another stream to enable to meet this requirement. So let's do a translocation. What do we need to do that? So you need a biologist who has a 10A1A permit from the federal government. And that is a permit that allows you to physically handle an endangered species. These are actually really hard to get. You need to be an expert fish biologist, and there's only a handful of those in the watershed. I could think of four people in Orange County and Inland Empire who have this permit. Second, you need an approved translocation plan, and this needs to be approved by both the state and the federal wildlife agencies, and that can take a long time to get that approved. The HCP's translocation plan took them over 3 years to get approved. You also need to have an approved tributary that's approved by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And there are a lot of factors that go into which kind of tributary is appropriate for a Santa Ana sucker translocation. So many factors that really there's only a handful, probably less than 10 tributaries in the watershed that are appropriate for this. And most of them have already been assigned and claimed by the HCP. And lastly, you need money for the translocation here. I'm going to combine these last 2 points. You need the operational budget for the translocation itself, and you also need to create a non-wasting endowment for in-perpetuity maintenance. This endowment has to be fully funded before the end of the translocation monitoring period and have a 2-year growth period before the end of that as well. So to summarize the problem at hand, our CDFW sucker-related obligations are 18 years overdue. Our staff does not have the qualifications for a 10A1A permit. Our staff are, you know, hired to do vireo monitoring work. They're bird biologists. They're not fish biologists. So we currently do not have anyone with a 10A1A permit. We don't have an approved translocation plan, which, again, could take over 3 years to get approved. And we don't have any approved tributaries, and most of them have already been claimed. When we recently had our water rights application approved by the state board, it was in good faith that OCWD would identify a path forward for this obligation. And we identified our solution as the HCP, or the Upper Santa Ana River Habitat Conservation Plan. Again, Heather gave a great presentation on this last week at the board meeting, but as a quick refresher, the Upper Santa Ana River Habitat Conservation Plan, or HCP, is essentially a large umbrella permit that provides endangered species permits for 21 covered species and lasts for 50 years. There are 11 water agencies, including OCWD, that are covered under this permit. We have three activities, the Prado Wetlands, the work at Sunny Slope Creek, and our sediment removal projects that will be covered in this permit. For any of the activities that require mitigation, the HCP has identified conservation projects to mitigate for those effects. And that includes Santa Ana sucker translocation for any projects that require a translocation. And most importantly for us, they already have a 10A1A permit and approved translocation plans and identified tributaries to complete these translocations. So as members of the HCP, we can join their translocation effort and use their plan and their permits to get into compliance for our CDFW obligations. I do want to note now that the HCP has not been officially approved yet by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, but the timeline for that is, I believe, early next year. After that, they will form a JPA, which will run this HCP program. Let's talk about money and let's talk about time. So the first half of this table here is going to talk about the cost associated with the HCP and compare it to if we did the translocation on our own or if we did it through the HCP. And then the second half, we'll look at the timelines for that as well. So upfront implementation costs, those include the development of a translocation plan and funding a breeding facility for Santa Ana sucker. HCP has put that as $125,000. For us, because we don't have a plan already in place, we'd have to develop that from scratch. And kind of using the estimates from the HCP, that'd be about $400,000. Whereas if we go with the HCP, they already have a plan. We would just split that cost with the six other agencies that, or five other agencies that are doing translocations. Operating expenses include the cost for actually doing the translocation, any of the reporting and monitoring. Those would remain the same either way we go. And the endowment would remain the same too. Again, this endowment has to be non-wasting and it has to be fully funded before the end of our translocation project. CDFW provides a calculator for that where you put in the cost of the operating expenses per year and it puts in the capitalization rate that they approve of and you get what your endowment needs to be. So that's set at about $670,000. So if we went with the HCP, the cost would be $935,000 for this translocation. Whereas if we did it on our own, it'd be about $274,000 more due to that cost of creating our own plan. And again, that's assuming that the timelines match up as well and that we can find an approved tributary. So looking at the timelines again, HCP has a plan and permits. We don't need to think about that. If we were doing it on our own, we would have to spend at least 3 years working on a plan and at least 3 years getting qualified staff through training to be able to have the appropriate permits that are needed. The endowment funding growth would remain the same and that you have to do the translocation for 5 years. So that timeline would remain the same. But again, that's going with the HCP will get us into compliance at least 3 years sooner than if we did it on our own. And again, the OCWD side there, that 10 years and $1.2 million is assuming we can get approved tributary. This cost to the HCP can be either paid just as a lump sum, one at a time, or broken down over time. This is a one-time project. We would just pay the HCP and they would manage it all. There would be some line involvement from OCWD biologists in terms of monitoring and doing the translocation, but all the reporting, all the permitting, that would all be handled by the HCP. I've broken this down over 7 years. That's because 5 years of monitoring and 2 years for the endowment to grow. This also just kind of makes the cost a little more palatable as opposed to looking at that full 935 at once. The first 2 years, you would just be paying the upfront implementation costs. So that's the cost for the plan that already was made and the cost for the breeding facility. And then starting to fund that endowment. We're actually third in line to get a translocation. So we would assume that we would start that translocation in year three. That's when the operational expenses get to be added into this budget here. 5 years of monitoring by the end of year seven, we should be fully dependent on that endowment, which has been fully funded by year five and has grown for 2 years. We do have funds that have been budgeted for this first year in the 2025-2026 fiscal year budget. So our recommendation today is to enter into agreement with the San Bernardino Valley Municipal Water District, the lead agency of the HCP, to complete this translocation of the Santa Ana sucker for $935,000 over 7 years. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Do we have any questions or comments?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
The presentation that was at the board meeting, last meeting, that was to join the JPA, and that was a different dollar amount. Would that be on top of this, or would it be combined with this?
It would be on top of this.
Okay. And then do we have to do that in order to get this plan as well? And would we,
yes.
It's not on the agenda. So I just was curious when that one would be due.
I believe we're already paying the HCP membership dues. So we're already a member of the HCP and the JPA.
Oh, got it. Got it. Okay. Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments online?
I see no hands.
What?
Director Yeo.
Director Yeo?
Yes. Excuse me. Yeah, thank you. I just appreciate the presentation. And this looks like a reasonable solution for an HCP. You know, at least we don't have to spend. These are not like salmon. We have to spend tens of millions building mm-hmm. fish ladders. So I'm supportive of the staff recommendation. Thank you. And with that, I'll make the recommendation to approve. I'll make a motion to approve the staff recommendation. Thank you.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Director Yeo, a second by Director Wygand.
Okay, roll call. Director Green?
Yes.
Director Wygand?
Yes.
Director Yeo? Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Nguyen? Director Mezqua?
Yes.
Thank you. That motion carries 5-0.
Okay. Moving on to informational items, emergency water supplies to South Orange County update.
Chris Olson has a quick update here.
Thanks, John. So this item is related to the summary meeting that we had on July 30th with the stakeholders meeting for the East Orange County Feeder Number 2 and emergency water supplies. So in the packet, there's the meeting summary, there's the presentation and the sign-in sheets. So this was with our producers as well as South Orange County agencies. There was 30 attending in person, 20 online. It was presentations done by myself, Matt Collins, Todd Demetrison, and Miguel and Cesar Barrera of Santa Ana. We went through the history, the existing program with IRWD, the project that's out for Santa Ana, the city benefits, and also talked about the draft operating framework. There was a lot of Q&A, as you can imagine. And what we really got down to, there was discussion of what are the institutional matters. So you'll see in the meeting summary, there's form that we're specifically focusing on right now, and that's how are you going to be able to use East Orange County Feeder Number 2? That's a critical component. It's also identifying the benefits to the basin agencies, our groundwater producers. It's developing a communication plan to help those agencies articulate the project benefits to their boards and city councils. And it's also clarifying some of the existing draft framework to be more representative of what the current one is with IRWD. So that's what we talked about. We're looking forward to taking this item to Waco on October 3rd. That's on the agenda right now. So we'll be doing a similar type of presentation with a similar group. And then going forward, there will be another stakeholders meeting and followed by a future metropolitan meeting with Moulton, Niguel, and the city and MODOC to discuss that connection to East Orange County Feeder Number 2. Just try to get through whatever it would take to utilize it and operate that for an emergency condition. And of course, anything that we have in the future, we will bring back to the committee as an update.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
Next item?
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Okay, so item 17, Madam Chair, is to present our official accumulated overdraft number for the water year ending in 24-25, and Brendan Neal will provide this presentation. Thank you.
So today I'll be providing the basin storage update for water year 2024-2025, which is the period from July 1st, 2024 through June 30th, 2025. We'll start off with a few highlights. It was a little bit of a dry year. 6.7 inches of rainfall fell at OCWD field headquarters. That's about a half of the 38-year average. We still were able to recharge a good amount of water from the Santa Ana River, and we recharged 3,500 acre feet less than budgeted, so not terrible for a dry year. Incidental recharge was 41,600 acre feet less than budgeted, and
you're good.
So incidental recharge was 41,600 acre feet less than budgeted. An incidental recharge is our unmeasured recharge into the basin. And so it includes things like mountain front recharge, local flows like urban runoff. It includes seawater intrusion and underflow across the county line. And we've been seeing a lower incidental recharge and higher storm flow recharge since 2018. But being as this is an unmeasured number, it's been a little hard for us to pinpoint exactly what's causing us to see these lower incidental numbers since that time. Also, GWS recharge was 14,900 acre feet less than budgeted. This was due to reduced GWS inflows from OC sand due to some maintenance issues from the period of July 2024 into November 2024, so about 5 months of reduced inflows, and also due to reduced injection rates in the Talbert Barrier caused by high groundwater levels in that area. Oh, there's a little bit of lag, sorry. So I'll briefly go over how we calculate the storage change. And I'll start off with this geologic cross-section through the county, basically running along the Santa Ana River. And we have the recharge facilities on the upper right-hand side in Anaheim. You can see these magenta-colored arrows showing water moving into the recharge basins and then moving towards the coast and also down through the aquifer systems. The groundwater basin itself, we separate into three different aquifer systems. There's the shallow aquifer we call layer one. And that's a water table aquifer. So as water levels move up and down in that aquifer, the pore spaces between the grains are actually wetted and dewatered as water moves up and down. So it accounts for a lot of that storage change. However, that shallow aquifer is not pumped heavily. Moving down lower into the principal aquifer, layer two, the principal aquifer accounts for about 90% of the pumping out of the basin. It's a confined aquifer. With all that pumping, we it's a pressure response because it's a confined aquifer. So as that aquifer is pumped up and down, as water levels move up and down, the pressures in the pore spaces change, and we're not actually dewatering all of the pore spaces there. So it accounts for a little bit less of the storage change. And then the deep aquifer is not pumped heavily and is also confined. So we'll actually skip it for some of these slides. And then the last thing to point out is near Santa Ana, you see the division between the pressure area and the forebay. And in the forebay area, which is roughly north of the 5 freeway, also called the intake or recharge area, that's where our recharge basins are. Geologically speaking, it's generally a lot of coarse-grained, coarse sands and gravels, not a lot of laterally continuous confining units, such as silts or clays that separate out those water-bearing aquifer units. And then if you move down on the coastal side of the 5 roughly into the pressure area, that's all confined units down there where we have that pressure response as far as water levels go. So the reason I mentioned that is that most of that water level change, the storage change occurs in the shallow aquifer in the forebay area around the Anaheim and Orange recharge facilities. So this process begins with water level measurements. This is a map from all of the wells that were measured this year for this effort. And it's a collaborative effort among OCWD staff who measures monitoring wells and injection wells throughout the basin, Orange County producers who actually will shut off a well for us and allow the water level to recover and provide us with a static water level, which is very helpful. We appreciate that. LA producers near the border will do the near the county border will do the same, and WRD also provides us with water levels in their monitoring well network. So we take all of those water level data, and we actually segregate them into shallow, principal, and deep aquifers, and then we plot them and actually hand contour that map. So we actually hand contour connecting lines of equal water level elevation. Those are the lines you see on this map. All the green lines, so everything's color coded, and all the green lines are above sea level. The blue, the small blue lines near the coast are at sea level, and the purple lines are below sea level. You'll notice that this map is mostly green lines, meaning these water levels are mostly all above sea level. We also have relatively smooth parallel contours. Not a lot of that's due to not a lot of pumping in the shallow aquifer. So everything just kind of moves smoothly. You see these blue arrows showing the groundwater moving from the recharge areas out towards the coast. And then if you look down towards the coastal area, we see these little purple depressions. Those are below sea level areas. And that is where there are areas of missing aquitard between the shallow aquifer and the principal aquifer. So it's acts like a drain where shallow groundwater can actually make its way through that through those areas down into the principal aquifer. Same thing would be occurring in the Talbert Gap, but we have the Talbert Barrier there, which is providing groundwater levels at or above protective elevations seaward of the Talbert Barrier. So we'll take a look at the principal aquifer water level elevations as well for June 2025. Same type of flow pattern, similar type of flow pattern, where groundwater is flowing from the forebay towards the coast, but also to the west out towards LA County. And also a little bit more complex patterns in these water level contours, and a lot more purple, a lot more below sea level water level elevations. And that's all due to the pumping. So we have water level contours stacked up near the county line. And also that means a tight hydraulic gradient. So water level stacked up kind of in the Irvine area. And then we have our typical low point around the IRWD Dyer Road well field. This year, the water levels were about 90 feet below sea level in the center of that depression there. Last year, they were about 80 feet to 85 feet below sea level at the same time. So, and that's exactly what we do, is we compare the 2 years. We compare June 2024 water levels to June 2025 water levels. We use our geographic information system to compare those contour maps from the 2 years and produce maps like this for all three of the aquifer systems. This is the shallow aquifer water level change from June 2024 to June 2025. We have a kind of a heat map here, a color gradient, where the reds are the large negative decreases between the 2 years, and the greens are the positive. And this beige kind of yellow color you see all throughout most of the basin is negligible change. It's centered on zero. So not a lot of change there throughout most of the pressure area. Small increase of 1 to 3 feet, 4 feet in the center of the basin. And then the coastal and Irvine areas, mild decrease of 1 to 5 feet. And then the large decreases occurred in the Anaheim recharge, near the Anaheim recharge facilities of 10 to 20 feet, and near the Orange recharge facility, Santiago basins of 30 to 50 feet. Down the Talbert Barrier again, things were stable. So you can see a change of 0 feet. So there is one artificial increase that's due to a new shallow monitoring well that was installed this year. It's our first year with data for June. So it's a one-time thing. We're going to have this artificial decrease. Just wanted to point that out in case that caught your eye. But going forward, we'll have more accurate water level measurements and storage calculations in that area. So we'll look at the principal aquifer water level change map. Same type of color gradient, but clearly more range, more variation, and some more negative numbers around. Again, that Anaheim and Orange recharge basins were the significant decreases, 10 to 20 in Anaheim, and then 30 to 60 feet of decrease around the Orange basins. Also, 15 to 20 feet in the coastal areas and in Irvine, and then the center of the basin in the pressure area was only maybe -3 to -5 feet. So again, I'll skip the deep aquifer, but we take those water level change maps and then apply our storage coefficient. We grid them up and apply our storage coefficient to each of those aquifer layers and come up with a storage change for the year, and then sum those and come up with the total. So the shallow aquifer system, as I mentioned, usually, especially in the Forbay area, accounts for most of that change. We had 39,000 acre feet of storage change in the negative direction, the shallow, minus 7,000 in the principal, minus 4,000 in the deep, for a total of minus 50,000 acre feet of storage change this year. So big picture, here's a schematic showing a, you know, the basin as a cup, showing our entire basin operating range of 0 to 500,000 acre feet, with our target overdraft range of 150,000 to 200,000 acre feet. The target overdraft range is not zero, so we can recharge Santa Ana River stormwater when it's available. June 2024, we were at 133,000 acre feet of overdraft, so actually slightly over our target overdraft range. And then applying that storage change of minus 50,000, we're now at 183,000 acre feet, so right in the center of our target overdraft range. Kind of for historical context, here is the accumulated overdraft since 1969. We see the 1969, the basin was considered full. 1983, the basin was almost full. And then we've seen some periods, dry periods, where the accumulated overdraft has dipped down to about 400,000 acre feet in that range, and then always rebounded. So like this recent period, the last 3 years, we've been at or above the target overdraft range. So I'll just briefly go over the groundwater balance for this year. The items are on the left, the terms on the left, and then the three columns on the right are the budgeted amount. So that would be the amount that we budgeted for the water budget, the amount that we have budgeted for, assuming the average level of rainfall, which is about 13 inches. The second column is the actual rainfall, the actual numbers based on the actual rainfall we received, and then the difference on the right. So there are three highlights, are the first three, the Santa Ana River Basin and storm flow recharge, 3,500 acre feet less than budgeted, incidental recharge, 41,600 acre feet less than budgeted, and GWRS, 14,900 acre feet less than budgeted. So a total water into the basin was 60,800 acre feet less than budgeted. And then total basin pumping was 10,200 acre feet more than budgeted, so a little bit more water out of the basin. And that's just simply due to a dry year with more water demands. So again, accumulated overdraft, storage change, 50,000 acre feet in the negative direction, and the accumulated overdraft of 183,000 acre feet. So where does that leave us going forward? So here we are at 183,000. The middle arrow there, average year. If we have an average amount of rainfall and have a storage change of about 20,000 acre feet, we'd expect to be at 163,000 acre feet. A wet year, we may end up at 113,000. And a dry year, we may end up at 213,000 at this time next year. So that's all I have. With that, I'll take any questions.
Any questions or comments?
Nothing online. So,
okay. Thank you for a great report. All right.
Stop here.
Let's put everything on consent. Do we have any director's announcements? General manager?
Nothing.
Okay, we're adjourned.